Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is Lisa Streifler, professor, photographer, painter, and innovative explorer of the effects of the subconscious on the body and how the mind-body processes intense emotional experience. Lisa works in a broad range of media along with photography and painting, such as drawing, performance, and digital imaging. Lisa grew up in Winnipeg, graduated from the School of Art at the University of Manitoba, did her MFA at Hunter College of the City University of New York, and has been the professor of visual arts at the University of Regina for a number of years. She has had numerous solo and group exhibitions across Canada, an exhibit in Bulgaria, and one coming up in London, England. Her works are held in major public collections, including the Canadian Museum of Contemporary Photography at the National Gallery of Canada in Ottawa, the Canada Council Art Bank in Ottawa, the Mackenzie Art Gallery in Regina, and the Winnipeg Art Gallery. Hello, Lisa, and welcome to Art World Innovators. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Susan. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Your current exhibition, Not the Camera, but the Filing Cabinet, Performative Body Archives and Contemporary Art at the University of Winnipeg. Can you tell us about this exhibit and what is the main focus?
It's a group exhibition, 10 women artists, and I haven't seen the exhibition yet because I wasn't able to be there for the opening, but it runs till the end of November, so I'll be there soon to see it. So the women artists work in a range of media, ranging from my work, which is painting and drawing, to sculpture and photography, audio, performance. Those are all the media. The women were chosen, you know, by the curator, who is a young curator who just graduated from the University of Winnipeg and is now doing her master's in Toronto. Her name's Noor Bangu, who I'm very impressed with. And she chose the artists based on the concept for the show. So actually, I don't know any of the other artists. I'm looking forward to seeing their work and hopefully meeting some of them. So we were brought together because all of our works in different ways address the female body and how the body signifies various struggles that women face and in a way that promotes agency and shows strength. So it's the show is about struggle and challenges, but it's also a very empowered show in terms of how the artists are confronting or dealing with these various issues.
So, for example, In Extremis, held at the Mackenzie Art Gallery a number of years ago, seems to be one of your exhibits that also illustrates how you're not afraid to take your viewers into the depths of their souls, with some difficult images leading to some rather difficult questions. What have you discovered over the years about how the mind-body processes intense emotional experiences from viewing such images and asking such provocative questions? Can you share with us a few audience responses to your exhibit?
Sure. That was quite a while ago. That one was 1992, and it was In Extremis. In Latin, it means near death. And so in that show, I was using animal bodies. So they were all specimens that I photographed behind the scenes, you know, in the preparatory area of a museum. So I was examining death. There was also actually three pieces that were photographed in hospitals, just the rooms and the equipment, no people. It is a very difficult subject, of course, and very hard to confront, but I was trying to talk about the fragility of life and using the animals metaphorically to talk about human life. I wanted the pieces to convey a sense of urgency and also to evoke a sensitivity in viewers, a sense of empathy. So it might have been a very beginning for me to deal with that subject. And I think probably that body of work dealt with the subject of death more than any work I've ever done.
Well, it sort of gives you a sense of the struggles and challenges that we face in discussing something as difficult as death, leading into the struggles and challenges that women have to face.
For women, the big issue is identity. That's another thing that this show, U of W, addresses. So there's women of color in this show. There's women of various gender identities. And I myself, I'm pretty sure I'm by far the oldest artist. So I have one painting. Well, I have one painting for sure dealing with aging, but I have another drawing that deals with it also. So we're all coming at the issue of our identities, and which are very different, but we all are trying to come to terms with them, and how we're received, you know, as women culturally, and memories of how we became who we are today and experiences we've faced. All the work is very personal, you know, and very autobiographical, I would venture to say.
Actually, I did get to see it, and it was quite good. There were a lot of different media and different types of work to show their struggles and challenges. How do you blend your photography with painting and other media? Are there certain themes and processes that you enhance in the mix?
Actually, the work that's on exhibit there doesn't have any photographic sources. So I really basically do two types of work. One is like the show In Extremis that you mentioned that is photo-based. And so when I work on photographs, I take the photographs myself. I did a series that was shown quite a bit called Normal, where I photographed myself and then I drew on top of myself. And I also wrote text on top of myself. So that's one body of work I do where I, nowadays, you know, I would scan the images and then I do a drawing on top of the photograph and I scan that. And so it's digitally produced. But the work lately, actually, I haven't been doing photo-based work. I've been back to the basics of drawing and painting. So the works at the University of Winnipeg are purely drawing and painting. So there's three works that are ink and gouache, which is kind of like a watercolor, and these special artist crayons that I love on paper, and then one that's acrylic paint on canvas. So I actually, you know, it's very direct to only work, you know, with immediately the immediacy of drawing or painting, whereas the photographic work, I also work intuitively and directly. You know, I have to be a little bit more calculated and plan it a bit more so that drawing and the photograph work together.
You have coming up Mentoring Artists for Women. You're going to be doing the lecture there, and there was a painting in the advertisement, Managing Chaos, in the ink and the gouache and crayons. Can you tell us a little bit about that work, and is it going to be here?
Actually, that work is not going to be, well, I'll probably show it, actually, in my talk, because the talk that I'm giving will be slide illustrated, so there'll be lots of images of my work, for sure, that I'll be talking about.
Okay.
And that's a piece from 2014, and it's a small piece, about 11 by 14 inches, and it's gouache on paper. The central image is a woman, and her arms are kind of going as if she was dancing up and down. They look like they're moving up and down, and there's a bright, bright green background and pink polka dots moving around. It was, you know, it's very intuitive, like all my work is. Actually, that work was made in Scotland. I was on a residency in Scotland near Dundee for 2 weeks in a castle.
Nice.
So it was really a wonderful experience for me. And all I did all day was make art, because when you're, you know, at a residency, the food is prepared and everything's taken care of. So it's just like a fantastic lifestyle for a couple weeks. So I made that there. And I use a woman's image in practically all my work. And so the image doesn't look like me, but, you know, it is about me. And I title my works later, but I thought she looked as if she was, you know, all those pink polka dots were chaos, were, you know, different types of chaos floating around, that she was kind of trying to keep at bay, almost like a juggler.
Oh, yeah.
And there's one in her head, right at her forehead. So that's, you know, like the brain, what's in her mind. And it's a playful work, actually. So what I did with that work, I used photography actually in a different way. So I photographed, I took a high resolution photograph of the painting, the drawing. It's a drawing painting, you know, on paper, but took a high resolution photograph and then I enlarged it and made a print, a photographic print of it, which I'm very, very pleased with. So it was actually at a MAWA auction, I think this year. So I have a few versions of it. So I have more than one. I don't make a large, you know, large edition, but up to 15 would be the largest number. And so, you know, more people can have the image and I can experiment with different sizes too. So I've made it a lot bigger than the original. So that's actually become a favorite image of mine.
So why don't you tell us a little more about the lecture coming up at MAWA, and that will be on October 21st at Cinematique on Arthur Street at 2.
Right. I'm calling it Gender Matters. So I liked that because it can mean, you know, that gender really matters, or matters of gender. So So I'm going to deal with both of those things. What I've decided to do is talk about my life growing up in Winnipeg and how I was influenced by living in Winnipeg and then going to the School of Art for my first degree. And I'm going to go on to my master's degree when I lived in New York and stayed there for 6 years. And then I'm going to continue on with my life as professor at the University of Regina, where I've been for 3 decades, a little bit more than 3 decades, and how that's influenced my work and my life. All along, I'm going to interweave into my talk women artists who've influenced me. And so I'll be showing their work and my work together. And there's a lot of them, so I have to be selective. You know, I could talk for probably 3 hours, but the talk is only 45 minutes with 15 minutes for questions. So I'm going to have to be quite selective, but there's a lot that I want to pack into the talk. It's sort of a homecoming for me.
Can you tell us a little bit more about being a professor and, you know, some of your focus and what do you find most rewarding about teaching?
Well, because I've done it over such a long period of time, it's really evolved. It's different now than it was long time ago. I'm a different age in relation to my students, all that. I find it rewarding to nurture young artists. So it's very fitting that MAWA would be interested in having me speak because MAWA is all about mentoring and I feel that my teaching is about mentoring. So that's how I approach it. I try to nurture young artists. I try to understand where they're coming from and where they want to get to help them. Of course, I have to teach them skills in the early classes, and I love teaching drawing and painting. Those are the areas that I teach, and we also have a graduate program, so that's very rewarding, too. I think, though, the thing I find probably the most rewarding is talking about the ideas and, you know, what students are trying to convey and trying to help them. I think, for me, I'm very interested in lots, a broad range of artists' work. So I have lots of books and I show a lot of images so students can learn from other people's work. That exposure is a really big thing to me. And I really learn a lot from teaching too, because I have to, you know, solve problems. And lots of times that takes me into areas that I wouldn't normally go into for my own practice. So it's pushed me to appreciate different things than I normally would. And to learn techniques that I, you know, don't do myself. So a lot of these things have influenced my work. And right now I'm teaching a new class with an art historian. So it's 50% studio, 50% art history. And we're focusing on the Renaissance because that's his area, talking about Michelangelo and Da Vinci. And now I'm going to try silver point, which is, you know, a Renaissance technique for drawing with a stick of silver. So, you know, I wouldn't in my wildest dreams have thought that I would do that because my work is very bold and contemporary. So I wouldn't think that I would go there. I wouldn't have thought that a few years ago. So I'm researching it because I think it would be good for the students. I'm getting pretty excited about trying it myself.
There's a lot of advantages to working with an art historian as well. So it's nice to come up with some new techniques to explore.
Mm-hmm. This is a new concept that we have figured out here at the University of Regina. And we've done this with sculpture and art history. And now this is the first iteration with drawing and art history. So it's great for some of the students have never drawn before. They're art history majors. And some don't love art history that much, but they're very strong in studio. So this is a very palatable way for them to take an art history class. Today we visited the biology lab here on campus because we're going to draw specimens, and that was extremely exciting. So we were getting ready to carry all these specimens back to the visual arts department, and then we just had an idea, why don't we bring the students to the biology department? And that's what we're going to do. So our class next week will be in the biology department. We're going to draw monkey skeletons and all kinds of things. I think there was a shark. I can't even remember what it's called. It was in formaldehyde. It was a fascinating image anyway.
Sounds like Damien Hirst.
Yeah, it does sound like Damien Hirst. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Students should see, they won't know who Damien Hirst is probably, but we should show them. Should definitely show them. We're focusing so much on Da Vinci. That's who we're thinking about, but very Damien Hirst. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, yeah, it's been great. Thank you very much.
That was Lisa Streifler, photographer, painter, and professor, speaking with us from the University of Regina. Hope you catch her exhibition on now at the University of Winnipeg. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our next guest this evening is Michael Elves, Program Director of UMFM 101.5 Radio, speaking with us about his show Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works. Michael also hosts a music show, Thank God It's Free Range, which he began producing as a volunteer when the station began operating in 1998. Michael completed his undergraduate degree here at the University of Manitoba, then did his master's in political science at University College in Dublin. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us today. Can you tell us about your show, Turning Pages, and how it came to be?
Well, the show itself kind of came out of another show I do. I've been doing the Free Range show on Fridays, which is kind of a station-directed show and variety show. And I started doing author interviews as part of that show and realized I could kind of spin off a dedicated program that was just for people who were interested in my conversations with authors. And so it's a half-hour conversation about one particular work. Usually authors are either in town to promote a new book or join me by phone to talk about their latest work.
Do you see the writing process as a creative art form, and in what ways?
Do I see the writing? Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm very interested in process, and a lot of my questions do center around process. And in terms of what way, it can kind of vary from person to person in terms of what I've learned from authors. Some are heavily edited and really kind of, there's that metaphor of, you know, finding the sculpture in a block of marble, and they kind of chip away and chip away and chip away until they find the statue underneath. Other authors certainly like kind of just write and put it out there and then kind of realize what they have afterwards, and they're less kind of intentional and more kind of stream of conscious in some way.
So is that the sort of thing that draws your attention to a particular author and their style and subject matter?
I have a pretty like wide range of things I'm interested in, so it's not always like I don't have to know about the process going into reading the book to enjoy it, but once I'm done reading the book and then get to talk to the author, a lot of times what I want to talk about is process oriented. But as far as kind of like what gets me into a book, if it's nonfiction, it's got to be kind of a subject I'm somewhat interested in or have a little bit of knowledge of already. Or sometimes if it's just something I've like completely left field but is just really well written, then I might go along for the ride. As far as fiction, there's a few kind of genres I'm not particularly fond of, like horror, that I've kind of shied away from, but on occasion have done and talked to the authors kind of coming at it from a neophyte's view. So pretty much nothing I won't investigate or kind of pursue, but the only condition is that I won't do the interview unless I've actually read the book.
How would they relate to the background that you have, say, from your studies? Did you study literature? What led to your interest in your chosen field?
My background is in political science and sociology and history, so not really necessarily germane to like talking about literature, but I'm a lifelong reader and pretty voracious. So it's much more something of a passion that I've turned into a pursuit. But when I've talked to people like David Suzuki or John Ralston Saul, and certainly like having knowledge of environmental policy or historical injustice in the indigenous population, I have a bit of a leg up in terms of talking to them about some pretty heady subject matter.
And is that how you usually choose to bring that to your audience?
I see myself as, you know, in a fortunate position where not everyone who reads a book and comes away with questions gets to ask those questions. So I try to be that person for the listeners. I try not to like spoil plot or anything like that, but to talk about like mechanics of writing or understanding when it comes to like fiction, you know, how they build their stories, or about motivations of specific characters. And then on nonfiction works, you know, what led them to the topic, how they went about putting the book together, you know, what they needed to learn in order to write this for us to learn from them.
Who would you say was perhaps one of the more exciting and renowned authors that you had an opportunity to ask those questions to?
I guess, one of the biggest ones was Jan Martel. He obviously was acclaimed for Life of Pi. I talked to him about the book, The Mountains of Portugal, and a very interesting interview. You know, there's definitely, like, I've talked to some big names in writing, but some of the most interesting ones were not necessarily, like, the biggest names. Sometimes just because it's, like, you know, the book itself I might be particularly fond of and super interested in. I really was fascinated with an interview that I did with this. She's called the Norwegian Margaret Atwood, Sophie Oksanen.
Oh, yes.
And it's sort of a metaphysical novel, and it's like crime fiction combined with fantastical sort of storytelling. And I really knew nothing about her, but it was a very fascinating book and then a fascinating interview about it. So that was one that I quite enjoyed. I mean, each of them, I come away with something out of each interview, I find, in part because I just bring a curiosity and an openness to it. So I allow myself the opportunity to kind of just see where they take me in terms of what they might say that spurs a conversation or more questions for me.
Right. And do you find that their background has a particularly strong impact on the types of stories and their insight to themes and topics?
Certainly some people are kind of working their way through their works. I don't think it's necessarily therapy, but like a lot of people kind of process things through their creative endeavors. Sometimes it's, you know, they come from a particular viewpoint or background that naturally kind of led them to a particular topic. But sometimes I've talked to people who, you know, started out as journalists and then didn't necessarily see themselves writing a history of, like, diabetes or something like that, but, you know, the opportunity presented itself and they decided to take it.
What do you remember might be your earliest memory of your voracious love of reading and how it began?
Well, I read my first book when I was 4. I read the Hardy Boys books. Apparently I had read, like, newspapers prior to that, but that was, like, the first book that my parents remember me actually reading.
Seriously?
At the time, doubting that I actually knew when I said I read it that, No, here's the plot, here's what I read, and then sort of proving I actually had not just said some words and
right.
had actually processed what I was reading.
That's great. 4 is pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you find is the most challenging about your work as a radio host and exciting?
Challenging and exciting? I mean, the exciting thing is, like, really getting to stretch out and go deep with some of these authors. A lot of them are used to doing, like, 5 or 7 minute why'd you write the book, quick hit interviews, when are you reading at McNally Robinson, what's your book about kind of thing. But I get to really kind of go into the text with them, and they seem to appreciate that opportunity. It is sometimes when I've got, you know, multiple books on the go because I'm scheduling interviews, it's hard to kind of keep topics and plot lines straight, but that's, you know, a lucky problem to have.
Toni Morrison was the Nobel Peace Prize winner for literature in 1993, and has been quoted as saying, if there's a book that you want to read but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it. Would you agree with her?
That's a good question. I've often wondered, like, what if I have a book in me? I don't know if there's a book. I always feel overwhelmed with the abundance of, like, existing books and new books coming out that I'm interested in reading, and at any one time have, like, a wish list of, like, 50 to 60 books deep.
Wow.
So I'm not sure if I've caught up to the point where I don't have something I want to read that doesn't exist yet.
Well, that's great. If you did want to write, any ideas what your subject would be? What you might write? Or you just enjoy reading the others?
I guess I write about music, but I don't necessarily feel that, like, what my writing about music is ever, like, I don't necessarily do long form stuff about that, and I appreciate, you know, just kind of doing short blog posts about a song or an album or things like that. And I don't know if I have something that would be book length at this point.
Well, I'll be looking forward to later. Maybe you will put out something that we can all share. And I want to thank you very much for joining us and for sharing your insight and experiences interviewing authors and producing Turning Pages on UMFM 101.5.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. That was Michael Elves, Program Director of UMFM 101.5, speaking with us here in the studio. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.